Good morning. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. I'm calling this meeting of the calling the committee to order. We're holding this meeting pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual meetings of this type. And I want to direct the attention of members of the public to our committee website, where you'll find an agenda and various materials. And with that, I think we are ready to have Mr. Dozeland take the roll.
Morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, vice chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney. Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens present.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz present.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott present.
Thank you. We have a quorum.
Thank you, members. And I'm going to ask Representative Pryor, vice chair, to move approval of our minutes from our March 29th meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Any additions or corrections to those minutes, members? Not hearing any. All in favor of approval of the minutes for our March 29th meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so that motion passes. Our minutes are approved. So members, we are starting our final set of regular meetings as a committee. I suppose we'll see if there'll be later meetings. But we have a set of five meetings coming up with today to move us through a budget process. So today we will be considering a budget proposal relating to pre-K. I think what I'll do is hand the gavel to Representative Pryor. Actually, I suppose before I do that, maybe I'll just complete this thought that the budget proposal today relates to pre-K, as you're going to be hearing shortly. The plan is to send that to the Education Finance Committee for consideration for approval in that committee's budget. I want to clarify then that next week we'll be considering the remainder of the committee's budget as we get more information about how all that will work and then have a series of meetings there. I do see Representative Bennett has her hand up, so we'll call on her to make sure we're all squared away and know what's going on. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Do we have targets yet?
No. Well, actually, Representative Bennett, we do in the form of we are authorized to propose spending the amount that's contained in today's pre-K bill. And so that we do know is a component of what we can spend and work with. And then that will end up, though, being carried in the education finance budget. However, still not final word on the remainder of our budget. Obviously, we'll be needing to get that, you know, ASAP, because I do expect to be rolling out a budget bill as soon as Monday. So moving really quickly on that. But at the moment, it's the pre-K part that we sort of have the, you know, fully locked in. But thank you.
Thanks,
for the question.
Mr. Chair, do we have any word on when those might come out or not?
Oh, I mean, I would expect very soon because we have, get direction very soon because we have, obviously, the bill has to be finalized. And I'd say things are close, but we need to have, you know, final word. So, but yeah, I don't have a particular timing, except that I just know that we obviously have to have that direction soon.
Thank you, Mr.
So,
Chair.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, and Representative Franzen has her hand raised, or Lead Franzen, please.
Mr. Chair, so just out of curiosity, so you're not sure what those budget targets are. I'm hearing rumblings around the capital budget targets have been released. You're saying they haven't been released, but you plan on having a bill out on Monday. How can staff put together a bill that quickly if you don't have budget targets?
So I should say, Representative Franzen, so I have a good a good sense of things, but as far as things being quite final, I mean, I guess you all know that I am as aggressive on early childhood budgeting and funding as anybody possible. And so what I'll say is that we have a general direction, and so I'm kind of using that to be trying to put things together, but not final numbers, and nothing that's been posted publicly and nothing that is final. And I'm pushing just as hard as I possibly can. So I will share with the committee as soon as I have that. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, yeah. And we'll get the bill posted and be able to move things along. So, okay, good. So we've got that general sense of things. So, but our first proposal, our first portion does relate to pre-K, and we do have that locked in as far as the proposal is concerned. And so, Vice Chair Pryor, handing things off to you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Pinto, would you like to move House File 4570 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
That is my motion, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you. And then, Chair Pinto, would you like to move to adopt the DE3 author's amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair, and I can explain that if you'd like.
All right. Let's hear the explanation of the DE3 author's amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, first of all, the bill before us, 4570, you'll note is just a single line, and it's what, for those members of the public may be watching, this is what's called a vehicle bill. It was brought up so that then it could carry set of budget proposals. The DE3 then contains the budget proposal relating to pre-K. I do want to clarify for folks that there was a DE2 amendment that's been posted for several days. I did make a couple changes to that and happy to just walk through those to make sure that there is not any confusion. There were two sections that related to early learning scholarships that were taken out of the DE2 because, again, we'll be addressing issues such as scholarships and other issues in our committee's jurisdiction next week. Made a slight change to the name of the pre-K program, and then the revisers had a few fixes, technical fixes. Otherwise, this is identical to the amendment that's been posted for several days. And so I'd ask members to support this, and then we can talk about the actual content of the proposal.
All right. So at this point, we can hear a walkthrough of the DE3 amendment as it would be added to House File 4570. And Ms. Mock, will you be doing that walkthrough then at this point? Are you prepared?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm prepared.
All right, please go ahead.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to walk through House File 4570 as amended by the DE3. So the DE3 has provisions that establish a new voluntary pre-kindergarten program for eligible four-year-old children. The first two sections make technical or conforming changes related to the establishment of this new program. Section 3 is where the new program is actually established. So I'll spend a little time here. Subdivision 1 allows a school district, a charter school, a licensed child care center, a licensed family child care provider, or a Head Start agency that meets specified requirements to establish one of these new voluntary pre-kindergarten programs. The requirements that these programs have to comply with are in Subdivision 2. They include many of the requirements that are currently in effect for voluntary pre-kindergarten programs, but there are a few new requirements. And those new requirements include having to provide at least 850 hours of instruction each year, a requirement to pay salaries equivalent to the salaries for public elementary school staff with similar credentials and experience, and a requirement that each VPK classroom has a lead teacher who has at least a bachelor's degree no later than July 1st, 2028. But that provision also provides that teachers who have been employed for 3 of the last 5 years by an eligible provider, excuse me, may be employed as a teacher even if they don't have a bachelor's degree. Subdivision 3 requires that school districts and charter schools that have the new VPK programs annually submit to MDE a mixed delivery program plan. And that plan is supposed to ensure alignment of all the VPK programs within the school district boundaries. Subdivision 3A describes how the funding works for the program. So school districts and charter school programs are funded based on the number of eligible students enrolled. Head Start and licensed child care programs receive $11,000 per year per eligible student. This subdivision also directs MDE to establish a process for allocating the new VPK seats among Head Start and child care programs. In Subdivision 4, an eligible child for purposes of the VPK program is defined. And that child is one who is 4 years old and meets one or more of the specified criteria. And these criteria include qualifying for free or reduced price lunch, being an English language learner, being an American Indian, experiencing homelessness, having an individualized education plan or otherwise being identified as having a potential risk factor that may influence learning. Being in foster care or in need of child protection services, being in kinship care, having a parent who is a migrant or seasonal worker, or having a parent who is incarcerated. This subdivision also provides that a child who does not meet the definition of eligible child may participate in a VPK classroom and may be charged a sliding fee for that participation. The DE3 repeals subdivisions 4 and 5. And then subdivision 7 describes the accounting procedures that VPK programs must follow. Sections 4 through 6 of the DE3 all make technical and conforming changes related to the new program. Section 7 allows MDE in fiscal year 2023 only to allocate early learning scholarship money to Head Start programs and child care programs to help them implement the transition year for the new voluntary pre-kindergarten program. Section 8 provides that fiscal year 2023 serves as a transition year for the current VPK, School Readiness Plus, and Scholarship Pathway 2 programs to be able to transition to the new VPK program. And then finally, Section 9 appropriates $96.9 million in fiscal year 2023 to MDE for VPK programs that are provided by Head Start and child care programs. And that is the DE3.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. And I believe we have testifiers to further walk through the bill. And Chair Pinto, are we ready for the testifiers?
You know, Madam Chair, just before we do, if I may, I just want to make sure that members and members of the public are aware that this is essentially identical to the budget proposal from the administration that we heard on the 24th, which I guess is just a week ago. It's hard to believe the way time is flying this session. And so we did receive a presentation on that and walked through that and received some testimony at the time on that proposal. And I'll say that that having considered it and thought a lot about it, I thought, in my view, that this is an extremely well-balanced and well-structured proposal that will give our young kids a terrific start. And so is eager to be supporting it. So just want to make sure members are understanding the context of that. And then with that, Madam Chair, I think we're ready for that. I'll maybe just give Ms. Beckel a heads up that it may be that after this, if she is available, I may ask her to just explain the finances of this. And members are aware of that. But again, the budget portion will be carried in the Education Finance Committee. Just to give her a heads up, it may make sense to ask for that. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Pinto. So our first testifier is Mr. Adosh Uni from Minnesota Department of Education. Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you. My name is Adosh Uni, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And thank you for the opportunity to provide support for Chair Pinto's DE amendment to HF 457 and its establishment of a targeted pre-kindergarten program that can serve up to 23,000 four-year-olds. This program is a crucial component of the governor and lieutenant governor's early childhood section of the Due North Plan. Setting up our students for success starts early. You've heard a breadth of research in committee that shows how critically important the early years are to setting a child up for positive educational, social, emotional, and behavioral outcomes later on. Our current pre-kindergarten system could benefit from a further reach and can improve upon what can be at times a disjointed system based on differing funding and program requirements. This bill makes the bold investment in a robust statewide mixed delivery pre-kindergarten program, coupled with funding for our youngest children to also access high quality learning opportunities. The research is clear about these impacts, and it is incumbent on us to ensure that all children have access and can participate in early learning opportunities. This proposal will utilize existing voluntary pre-kindergarten, School Readiness Plus, and Pathway 2 funding, combined with new funding, to provide high-quality pre-kindergarten programming to the most in-need four-year-olds in settings best tailored to the community. The mixed delivery model allowing for Head Start, child care centers, and family-based providers to join school-based settings in delivering this program will expand opportunities statewide and better meet families where they are. The program parameters will also maintain the high-quality components of a public pre-kindergarten program regardless of setting. things like a higher dosage of 185 hours, provisions of school-based general education-funded support programs, a KEP assessment for all participants, access to food and nutrition, presence of a licensed teacher, and salaries comparable to those of K through 12 staff will help ensure these high-quality programs. Again, thank you to Chair Pinto and the committee for carrying this proposal forward.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ooney. We have more testifiers on this bill. And next up, I see Caitlin Snyder from Education Minnesota.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. I'd like to thank the committee today for your strong investment in early learning and care. Early learning and care providers are traditionally incredibly underpaid and unable to access professional development like their K-12 peers. This bill addresses both of those challenges. One of the struggles that we face in this area is that we cannot separate care from education at this age group. We need to create a mixed delivery pre-K system that's aligned with the early indicators of progress that's serving kids in the system's best design for them. We appreciate the investment in mixed delivery system and creating the ladder to maintain the providers in the system. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Our next testifier is Cindy Cunningham. Ms. Cunningham.
Good morning. Give me just a moment there. I'm going to pull up my testimony on my computer, so now I can't see anyone. I am Cindy Cunningham. I've been a licensed family child care provider for 26 years and am the current public policy chair for Minnesota Child Care Provider Information Network 501c3 statewide association. I'm testifying to share McPinn's concerns in opposition to the proposed pre-K plan as it is presented by the bill HF4570. Since it was mentioned Tuesday, I will comment that I don't have children in care today. I'm taking time away from my own grandchildren because this is such a critical point to have our input put in on it. McPinn has met with MD. We've listened carefully to the plan. We've also been connected on a national platform of advocates since early last fall regarding the federal actions on the Build Back Better bill. These advocates strongly support mixed delivery in all care settings. Most have stated concerns about the Build Back Better degree requirement and other aspects to the proposal. McPinn actually took the steps to separate from the National Association for Family Child Care Providers because of a differing views of the Build Back Better. We just have great concerns over this. I'm just going to do a little humor. I grew up in Iowa. No one hold it against me. I'm well familiar with the movie The Field of Dreams. I've been to college where it was built. I love baseball. However, the continuation in Minnesota to build fields of dreams, such as this bill, will continue to expand has got to stop. Funding programs who then determine who gets the benefit and expecting parents and children to come does not meet the needs of our youngest children and their families. They can't do what the movie did with baseball players and the fans. I'm going to relate this to the Build Back Better issues that we have been trying to get changed, and because that's the basis of much of this program. The Build Back Better, number one, has not passed. Senator Smith's office says it will likely not pass, at least as it is. If it did pass, it would come to the state, and the state would have a full, robust overall look about whether to adopt these practices or not. That's not happening in this case. To base Minnesota plan on a federal idea, which isn't in place, is highly questionable. Even if these discussions need to take place transparent, not just on a specific pilot for four-year-olds who do need care. The Build Back Better sets directions for MD to not be the overseer of the programs because there are concerns of a school system not supporting mixed delivery. The percentages based that have been talked about and have been shared of a 40% school, 30% Head Start, 30% child care is very concerning. This is almost a full 180-degree shift away from what current percentages are. Shifts children to schools away from other forms of care. Child care, as labeled, is a mix of centers and licensed family child care. There's also not a requirement that these percentages be met. They're guidelines. We were told that they can't be put out hard and fast because they can't be guaranteed they'll be done, and so the school district gets to decide. There's no incentive for a school district to ensure that they're followed. School districts, like most entities, will proceed with what is normal and known. For them, it will be schools. School districts frequently do not recognize childcare as a quality setting, and we believe we will continue to be marginalized, or fear will be continue to be marginalizing our value. Excuse me. The degree requirement is an incredibly problematic piece. Even though it says 6 years, and the Build Back Better even had some that it could be done in the between, a six-year out will still eliminate and exclude many early childhood educators in many settings. Minorities will be marginalized. That isn't an equitable standard. We currently have a crisis in ECE with minority representation in child care in provider settings. This will exacerbate the situation. Current care providers working full-time do not have the flexibility to obtain a four-year degree. Paid time off from work, financial supports for education are limited. Many of them are parents of young children, complicating our time away from working family to obtain this degree. BA degrees are overvalued to prepare young children for school and life. There are many qualified classifications for providers to ensure that they have the best tools to best prepare children. We have Parent Aware, which the state has highly invested in. Early childhood education has certificates and diplomas, AA degrees, accreditation, Montessori certificates. These will all be excluded from this degree requirement. There are no studies which support that a BA degree is the only degree to give this quality of a standard. BAs are the known standard in schools, hence why we believe it's comfortable for the MDE system to go this route. There's a sense of disrespect to those who do not have a degree without an understanding of the skills present. There is no complete studies which evaluate what setting children who are not prepared for schools, where are they coming from? To make a leap in an assumption that only BA degrees are prepared is not supported. I will add, I do have a BA degree in that includes early childhood education teaching. So I would be able to do this program without, so I'm not speaking where I'm coming from a lower position. Mixed delivery will not be in existence as these programs will not be available. None of the research says that children need to be in school classroom to build a success. All of the investment return models never go for school classroom. Early childhood education takes place 24/7. The ultimate impact will lead to long-term limits of choice for families. Families need this variety of choice, including preschool settings in the broad definition, not just school. Children will be removed from childcare settings, leading to an even larger childcare crisis. Programs such as centers, licensed family childcare will not be able to sustain their businesses and therefore less choice. We ask legislators to stop this plan. Ultimately, the presented structure will lead to families having limited choice and children will not have full support to grow and flourish. We would ask that, that they support children and families by funding Pathways 1 scholarships and CCAP. These fundings have proven to meet children and families where they are. It does not build programs, which then the program gets to distribute the wealth to who can make it into the program. $11,000 per child would have a great impact on giving parents shopping dollars to go to the settings which meet their needs. $850 or 850 hours in this setting at $11,000. I provide care, can provide care for a four-year-old for around $8,000 for over 2,000 hours. And that's that continuity of care. It's a consistency of throughout the whole care setting time period that that child is being enriched. Non-traditional hours, non-school hours can be met by Pathways 1 and CCAP. To expect children and families to participate in the few hours a school offers does not cover their overall needs. Child care, whether center or licensed child care, along with many other non-school programs can meet families and children's needs. Please lean on the experts in the fields of early childhood education, those who have been providing positive settings for decades. Schools have not been meeting these needs for these little as long as others have been. Frequently, the statement is made children are not ready for school. Again, there is no study that says where did these children come from. There's an assumption that it was just because they weren't in a school setting. Tuesday's hearing had an exchange, uncomfortable as it was, about whether family child care providers are feeling supported and by whom. Excuse me. There are many who have supported family child care, as Representative Walzlick and others at this table, including the task force. However, the overreaching message by the House and the administration is that we are not supported. efforts such as Pathways 2, this bill, appointment of a controversial person to the ombudsperson position, lead to perceptions of being marginalized and disrespected. We need to stop building programs with Pathways to and School Fund, expecting families and children to come to them. The state needs to financially support families and children where they are, create support for all settings, not set up funding streams and directions which will lead to the demise of categories of programs, such as family child care. Intended and unintended consequences of bills such as this need to be looked at critically first, then plans implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Finally, we have Erica Moss. Ms. Moss.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Erica Moss. I'm the executive director of Close Gaps by Five, and I'm here today to share our concerns with House File 4570 as amended. We acknowledge and appreciate that the Walz administration has made significant improvements over previous universal pre-K proposals, specifically targeting funding, at least at the outset of this expansion, and making a stronger effort to provide for mixed delivery. But we still do not believe this approach makes sense for Minnesota. While the proposed pre-K approach has improvements, as I said, the program is, the approach has more improvements, as I said, making it more like the Early Learning Scholarship Program, but it still falls short of giving families maximum choice and flexibility. It still creates steep barriers to participation for community-based childcare programs, and for programs able to overcome those barriers, subjects them to another layer of requirements and associated administrative burdens. Beyond this, we continue to have serious concerns, as the previous testifier mentioned, that the mixed delivery provisions in this proposal do not go far enough and are not strong enough to overcome the very serious danger of undermining the supply of quality childcare available to infants and toddlers. By contrast, the scholarship program could be brought to scale, serving entire cohorts of children, ages birth to five, and building a system serving entire income bands of children, ages birth to five, and getting us out of the trap of building programming down from elementary school to birth. I think that's a key goal of this committee. It's something that I think we've all come along together on as the right approach, and continuing to focus just on four-year-olds and building this kind of a system for four-year-olds will have a lot of unintended consequences. I would just point out that if the compensation requirements and degree requirements in this bill are enacted for a mixed delivery system for four-year-olds only, that would, for example, just one example of a side effect, create, would sort of suck up the talent that's available to serve all children ages birth to five to that four-year-old age band and would be detrimental to infants and toddlers. By contrast, again, focusing on a system for birth to five that's not bifurcated into preschool and childcare, we all agree that those two things are the same and can be accomplished at the same time, is a much better way to go about it, in our view. I have a lot of questions about how this program would work. I don't have time to go through all of those questions, but I guess my main question is, why would we create yet another new program when we already have a mixed delivery, birth to five, quality-linked funding stream in early learning scholarships, which maximizes parent choice and flexibility. Before, I guess at a minimum, before you proceed down this path to having a separate pre-K funding stream, I would encourage the committee to look at the approach that's being taken by the city of St. Paul, which after an extensive community engagement process to design a pre-K program for a referendum proposal, chose to sketch out a system very much like Pathway One scholarships. As I understand it, the blueprint for Spark St. Paul does the following. It uses a simple unified application and enrollment system for all providers. It builds on the familiar parent aware system as a quality measure. It allows parents, not bureaucrats, to detect direct resources, and it administers funding through a neutral entity, not the school district. In closing, I think many of you know that our organization has ties to the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, which first piloted scholarships. And I think, our goal and our purpose when we set out was to be honest brokers in this discussion. We don't stand to gain anything if scholarships are enacted, except helping kids. We aren't providers. We aren't going to administer the scholarship system. We're just setting out to build a program and a system that works for the state of Minnesota and for kids and families. And in doing so, we really intentionally, when we set up the scholarship program, we really intentionally directly chose to fund families and not programs. Our thinking was that we would get you all, policymakers, legislators on this Zoom, out of a bind of having a lot of different types of programs and interests coming to you, asking you to divide the pie. We thought it'd be a lot easier if parents had that power and parents directed the resources, and those providers, instead of spending their energy coming to you, looking to get advantage in the system or other, specific requirements for percentages of how much of the resource they would get, whatever it is, that those providers can instead focus their energy on attracting families to their programs and proving that they're the best place for those kids. And I've never felt bad about that choice. I still think it's the right choice. I think that what I know after years of this work is that parents love Head Start. They love school-based programs. They love family child care. They love centers. All of those are good options and can be really good options for families. Families find the fit that works for them. And all of the programs will get funding. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And we see that with Pathway One scholarships. So I guess while I say that, I would just say that this has always been controversial since the very beginning. We have, since we set out, there has been this tension over who should control the distribution of the resources. And that has only intensified as the resource or the potential for getting the resource has grown because, the stakes are high. And I guess I would just implore the committee to get back to basics and think about this approach of allowing families to be empowered to direct the resources in the system. I think it's so much simpler in so many ways, and it eliminates so many decisions that need to be made from a top-down perspective. It eliminates so many administrative headaches for providers. It's the easiest on families. If you think about a family living in one school district but using a childcare program in another, when their child turns four, do they have to switch programs to go back to their district if they want to do pre-K? There are just all kinds of crazy scenarios and issues that need to be figured out that are set off. And we have a scholarship program. It works. It's been in place for 10 years. It's homegrown. I would just implore the committee to focus on that approach and getting something completely done, fully funding scholarships, and then thinking about where the gaps are after we do that and what needs to be done going forward. In closing, we really do appreciate this committee. We appreciate the committee's commitment to more funding for early care and learning. We would just ask you again, as you continue your work, to consider simpler ways of creating an equitable system of early care that keeps children and parents at the center. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. At this point, committee members, we will hear from Solveig Beckel, our fiscal analyst, to discuss the fiscal implications of the DE3 amendment. And so, Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm just going to share my screen now. The host appears to have disabled doing that. So I would ask the host to enable screen sharing for this purpose.
Looks like you're on.
Great. Okay. So here is the spreadsheet. You'll notice, of course, that the top does say governor's recommendations, but as this proposal matches some of the governor's recommendations, this is just a breakdown of how the funding for this VPK 2.0 program would work. You don't necessarily need to pay too close attention to lines 2 through 9, but if you're interested in how the formula funding works, these are just all of the various formula interactions with Gen Ed, Achievement and Integration Aid, Charter School Building Lease Aid, the Alternative Teacher Comp Aid, the Special Education Aid, the LTFM Aid, and then the Breakfast and Lunch Interaction. So all of these things are linked to the increased number of students that would be considered part of the formula under this program. Jumping down to line 12, I have items that are not formula-based necessarily that relate to this pre-K program. So line 13, the Department of Education would receive $2.584 million in the first year of this program, fiscal year 23, and then a total of $5.458 million in the TALES for administration of this new program. Line 14, the increase to the developmental screening aid would result in an increased funding of $977,000 in fiscal year 23, and then an increase of $2.09 million in the TALES. And then this is an item that you do see in the DE3 here, the voluntary pre-K through mixed delivery. I've just broken out what the department estimates the funding would be of this $96.92 million that is ongoing. So line 16, the Head Start program, and again, this is all just estimates that the department has done. They predict that the Head Start program would receive $47.278 million ongoing, that licensed center and family child care providers would receive $47.278 million ongoing. And then the administration of the distribution of these funds, they would be allowed to use $2.364 million ongoing to distribute those funds accordingly to Head Start and the licensed center and family child care. The bill also stipulates that Pathway 2 funding might be reallocated in order to transition to this new program. And so, again, the department predicts that $18.823 million in fiscal year 23 would be reallocated, and then $46.08 million in fiscal years 24 and 25 would be reallocated. So this is pre-existing funding, so not officially a change item. So the total changed costs, the total increased costs for fiscal year 23 would be $155 million, and then in the TALES, the increased cost would be $370 million. And that is the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. At this point, I think it's, I will return to the author, or the current author of the bill, Chair Pinto, for perhaps your clarifying comments, and then we'll turn to member questions and discussion.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. So yeah, just a few clarifications for members and members of the public. So one thing, the spreadsheet that you just saw, the top portion reflecting funding going through the formula, that is the reason that this proposal does need to go through the Education Finance Committee. Chair Dabney's committee oversees the general education formula. A portion of this does not go through the formula, but because it's all one program, that's why it's moving this way. I also wanted to clarify, Madam Chair and members, just a couple things from some of the comments that as you'll have seen in the spreadsheet, the funding for Head Start and licensed child care does not flow through school districts. In the bill, it flows through MDE, and it would not be that I heard some comments about providers having to you'll get permission from the local school district or that sort of thing. It is not set up that way, and also that there is some question about the split between the funding going to public schools through the formula and then going through the other providers, and that amount is fixed, as you'll have seen from the spreadsheet. There's a direct appropriation that goes to licensed child care and Head Start, that is separate from the money that flows through the formula. So that split is concrete. The split within that first amount of the appropriation may vary somewhat. I want to make sure that it's clear that it's not sort of dependent on school districts, for example, to decide we're going to send this amount of money this way and that amount that way. And then finally, I did also just want to clarify, Madam Chair, that there's not a requirement that lead teachers have a four-year degree in that there is that requirement, but there's a significant exception for folks who have worked in the field for several years, I think 3 years of the prior five, and have experience and expertise, which of course we have so many providers who do. So I just want to clarify a few of those points, and I'm sure we'll have a good discussion. And so with that, Madam Chair, certainly ready for questions. Discussion, thanks.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. So at this point, members, we have time for questions and discussion. All right, I will call on Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Chair, Chair Pinto. I thank you for working on this. I don't really quite know what to say here, but I am so very concerned about it. I know the intentions are good with this bill, and I think, the focus on our earliest learners is important. Attempting to add more funding in appropriate ways is always, I think, a good thing. But I do see this as an end effect that is going to destroy our private childcare providers. And that concerns me greatly. And we did hear some testifiers that gave some details concerning that. But the funding is this great kind of carrot that will lure some of these providers in, but in the end, I do believe it's going to sink them with the various regulations that are in here. We need to focus, I believe, on the scholarship program that we have, the choice that gives parents. In the end, what's here is going to fund the programs more than it's going to fund our families who deserve the choice and the opportunity to send their kids to places that work best. And focusing on four-year-olds, which is a really good thing, will also just sink the rest of the children and it's going to cause more problems. And I don't need to repeat the various concerns that were mentioned, but I do share those concerns. And I really hope that we can reconsider this. And it's such an important area, and I appreciate and I know the intentions are good again, but I do think in the end this is going to kill what we have left in our choices for parents and funnel everything into government programs. And I don't think that's good for parents and families or kids. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you so much, Representative Bennett, for sharing those thoughts. I really appreciate it. And I would say that in conversations that I've had with colleagues through the years, I think even some folks on the committee are aware of this, that we've talked about, in my view that having preschool be available to all Minnesota kids is critical and so important, and I'm really glad to be advancing this. And I've made the point that if the only thing that we did was snap our fingers and had 4-year-old preschool in our state and didn't do anything else, that really could have a significant impact on our the rest of the early care and learning system. And so I really take to heart what you say. In my view, this is an approach that really does take that concern into account. Significant portion of the funding, of course, going to licensed child care. And by the way, I should probably pause and just explain for folks who may be confused by that point of how it could be threatening. The concern would be that unfortunately the way the economics of the system work is that the overworked and underpaid parents of four-year-olds are in fact subsidizing the even more overworked and underpaid parents of infants and toddlers. And so if we entirely remove four-year-olds from our licensed child care, that could have a significant impact on a care for infants and toddlers. I'll point out, though, that this really is part of a broad proposal that has funding where we have four-year-olds, in fact, receiving early learning and care in our licensed child cares, in addition to a variety of settings. This is a mixed delivery approach. And that this is, as you're well aware, Representative Bennett and others as well, we want to make sure that we're having significant funding going to the rest of the system as well to recognize that the economics of early care and learning are really broken. And so this is a piece. It's unfortunate we have to do this in stages in our committee, but it is very important to me to continue to support our entire early care and learning system. And I don't believe that this ends up being a threat to that. The way that this is structured and can only enhance and support our young kids. I also just want to note, you expressed the concern that a childcare provider who signs up for this would have all these onerous regulations. Just to confirm, there is a minimum number of instructional hours. There is an assessment that's required of the child's progress. And then eventually there is either an educational requirement, or really, I think for most providers, it's simply that they've worked in the field for several years and have deep expertise. As far as I'm aware, and you can point something else out to me, but as far as I'm aware, that's it. I suppose one other thing is simply making sure that the curriculum that provided is something that is consistent and connected. But there's not massive additional set that's going to cause a provider to sink from that. We really want to make sure we're providing strong support. So in any case, I really appreciate your concern about this. I think that the way that it's built, that is not a concern with this proposal. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any follow-up, Representative Bennett?
No, Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Other member questions at this point?
Madam Chair, I know there's an amendment, and perhaps now's the time to do that.
All right. Yes, there is a A1 amendment, and I believe Representative Dabney, you're the author of the A1 amendment.
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
At this point.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the, let me see if I can get this right, HF4570A1 amendment to be before the committee, please.
All right. So we have a motion that the A1 amendment be before the committee now. And Representative Dabney, would you please explain the A1 amendment?
Certainly, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment recognizes that teachers are teachers, and that the lead teachers in this mixed delivery system in the public portion, the public school portion only, would be recognized as teachers with honoring their training and preparation and expertise in leadership in the classroom, and they would then be allowed their rights to participate in collective bargaining as members of the eligible unit would be recognized and respected. I ask for member support.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Are there any questions at this point about the A1 amendment before we take a vote? And Chair Pinto.
Yeah, I'll just make a comment that I appreciate Representative Dabney bringing this forward. I'll just note that this is very similar to and really connected with a bill that we advanced as a committee last year, House File 711 from Representative Sandell. And we had approved that as a committee. And so I do consider this to be a friendly amendment that's consistent with the work that we've been doing over the past years. I mean, I see a couple hands, so there may be some different views.
Mr. Chair, are we supposed to adopt the
DE? I recognize Lead Franson.
I think we were supposed to adopt the DE3 first, weren't we?
Madam Chair, Representative Franson, Representative Franson, thanks for raising that. I always get confused about that when we have these DEs. It may be that we, I think though that we have to amend the amendment that's before us, and then we make the decision on the amended amendment.
Okay.
But now, thank you for raising it, because I think that that's right. Yeah, thank you. I'll just note, I think the problem is because if we voted on the DE3, it hasn't been amended yet. And so what we need to do is first have it be brought up. It's sort of like, now that I think about it, it's like when we do on the floor. Somebody brings up an amendment, it's sitting out there. We then go to the secondary amendments, we vote on those, and then you make the decision on the primary amendment. So I think that's right, but I will admit to feeling a little bit confused. I think Ms. Breck will leap on in. All right, thank you.
Did you want me to clarify, Chair Pinto?
If I made Ms. Freck, you could just confirm that what I said was correct or wrong, but otherwise play it.
Yes, the A1 is an amendment to the DE3 amendment, so that would need to be adopted before we vote on adoption of the DE3 amendment.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. So we are looking to amend the DE3 amendment with the A1 amendment from Representative Dabney. And if there's no further questions or comments on the A1 amendment, we will take a vote. So all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment carries.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right. Seeing no further questions, Chair Pinto renews the motion to adopt the DE3 amendment as amended. And members, please unmute yourself to vote on adoption of the DE3 amendment as amended. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, please say nay.
No.
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 The motion prevails and the amendment as amended is adopted. And Chair Pinto, do you have any further words on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will note if there are other, I know that may have been a little bit confusing in each of these steps. And so I certainly would urge you, Madam Chair, that if there are members who have other comments or questions at this point, that they should certainly feel free to. As I'm talking, I'll just please interrupt me, Madam Chair, if folks raise their hands. In fact, right as I said that.
We do see a hand. thank you, Representative Damuth. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, and I appreciate you giving that opportunity to jump in for another comment, Chair Pinto, also. It was a little bit confusing as we proceeded through, but again, bringing this bill forward, I definitely have concerns over it. I think they're going to be a little bit too much to go into right now as we're walking through. I know this is going to be heard in Ed Finance also. Concerns also from the very beginning, you know, the question on targets and the decisions that we're making here. I think the important thing that we do is we keep children, our earliest learners, at the very center of what we're doing, and then that flexibility for the families. We know not every family needs the same type, and I know there are some options. You know, I have a very deep interest in family childcare, specifically as it plays out in a variety, but also the importance of Head Start and even our public schools as they provide care. So the mixed delivery is important. Just wanted to make a couple of comments to the bill author. Again, thank you for bringing this forward. I do have concerns. I think we need to make sure that we are not making this as an extension of our public schools. I see that being a part of it. More discussion will happen as we get those final targets and as we go into the next committees. I appreciate what some of the testifiers said. I know Ms. Cunningham raised some concerns from her perspective. Ms. Moss also did the same thing, and I think she might have been, I took a few notes, she might have been the one that talked about keeping families at the center too. But again, Mr. Chair, thank you, or to the bill author, thank you for bringing this forward. Big conversations that need to take place in Minnesota. I know those will be ongoing and continuing. So thank you. No specific question, just some comments.
All right. Thank you, Representative Damon. Lead Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'm sure we all remember the game and probably maybe even still play the game Jenga. So in the game of Jenga, there's a tower and there's all these little pieces fit together, and you take a piece out and you see if the tower is going to fall. You take another piece and people keep moving the piece and moving up and down and in order to keep that tower together. Well, I feel like our childcare system under this bill, if this bill were to pass, is going to be another piece of the Jenga game, that it's going to create an issue where the childcare industry is going to collapse. The tying money to MDE with the childcare providers is extremely problematic. I think we need more choice in the system and actually truly listen to the providers that have, you know, Ms. Cunningham, who speaks for thousands of childcare providers here on this topic. And once again, we are competing with the private sector, and I've mentioned this before in another hearing. Every year, we're told that we're going to be trying to help the childcare providers, but every year they leave the legislature and we've only made the problem worse. And so, Mr. Chair, I really hope that you take these comments that were made today very seriously. And I know you're just carrying the water for the governor, so they're not directed to you, but I do know that you are, I would hope, in communication with the governor and his staff that his proposal really is unworkable. It's only going to create a bigger problem. And then in 2 years, you're going to be like, oh, we got to fix this. Things are even worse when more parents are going to be coming to us and saying, what are you doing for childcare? Putting these kids into government programs or at least routing them through legislation, the government programs just isn't the answer. We need to allow the private sector to thrive and take what they had to say today very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Franson. So members, just to, you know, again, kind of benchmark where we are in this process, we have officially adopted the DE3 amendment as amended. And we do have time for further discussion. I'm going to send it back to Chair Pinto for his comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and certainly we'll see if folks have more. I'm not sure. I see Lee Franson's hand is still up. I suspect she's maybe gone, but just in case, Madam Chair. Oh, okay, I see. Okay, thank you. So members, so a couple things. First, just to clarify, so although this proposal is running through the Education and Finance Committee, and the plan is to have that be included in the budget, and they'll be, Chair Dabney's committee is reviewing things, I guess I will just commit to you all that from my perspective, this is our committee's, this will be, I think when it's adopted, our committee's proposal in this area. And I intend, I think there was a comment one of the other members had made about sort of, you know, considering this as things move along. But just to say that I plan to do all that I can to defend the decisions of this committee in this area. Portions do need to run through the formula. And I know we're fortunate to have Chair Dabney on our committee as well. I know he's very committed to these issues. But so I just wanted to clarify that. It's unfortunate we have to break all this into pieces, but this is just the way that things are structured. Members, I'm thinking of Representative Franson, Lee Franson's Jenga analogy, and just pointing out that, you know, in fact, over the last few years, we have put in all kinds of pieces into that extremely rickety. We inherited an extremely rickety Jenga game before the pandemic, before this committee came in. And that wasn't the fault of anybody who's on this call. That's something that's been decades in the making. The economics in this sector are extremely, extremely challenging, as they would be, again, if we didn't have public support for the education of children ages 5 to 18. So a reminder to you all that we have the stabilization grants that are going every month. Starting in July, those will start to drop. That is a Jenga piece that's getting pulled out. We, for a long time, they struggled to even keep our CCAP rates at the federal standard. That was a Jenga piece getting yanked out. What we are doing through this is we are, in fact, putting Jenga pieces in, and I certainly expect and hope to be doing so as well next week, to take a holistic and broad approach to make sure that through a mixed delivery proposal, in this case for four-year-olds, and then through the other work that we have been doing and will be doing, that we are, in fact, strengthening the system. I was chuckling a little bit at Lee Franson's comment about carrying water for the administration, because I think if you were talking to people in the administration, they would say that Dave Pinto, when it comes to early childhood, can be kind of troublesome, but is not necessarily always carrying exactly what they want. This is a place I can tell you honestly and candidly, members, that I examined this proposal from every angle, and concluded, and in presenting to you all the conclusion that this is a terrific approach for us to take, and the fact that it was suggested by the administration is not a reason to reject it. And I'll finally note that, in fact, there is strong support for these sorts of proposals. I had noticed in Ms. Cunningham's comments that her organization of family child care providers had split from the National Association of Family Child Care Providers. That organization, I gather from what she said, endorsed the federal Build Back Better plan, which, in fact, this is very similar to. Providers, it's true, some are not supporting proposals such as this, but many, many are, apparently including this National Association of Family Child Care Providers. Members, it is time that we took the step to say that young kids deserve care and learning to the same extent as older kids. We need to make sure that we shape it in a way that works. And I would argue to you that this proposal does so. And I really appreciate the discussion. I know we're going to continue doing that over the next week. And please would urge members, let's keep the dialogue going. That you may have a conclusion that folks are not pleased with at any given stage, but we're going to at least try to think it through together as best we can. So thank you so much, Madam Chair, and I'd urge your support of the proposal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually realize I do have a question that I have not gotten in yet before we move. But that, those are great closing comments, and I'm sorry to step on the line there. But I know that some of the questions that we had in the and from members was the idea that we are kind of like creating new programs and splintering things off in new ways. And I did want to go back to perhaps what we have on tap, Nikki Coben from the early learning director from the Minnesota Department of Education, to talk a little bit about how we actually are moving towards more of a uniform approach to, especially within our school districts, the voluntary pre-K program, and continuing just to have, one set of standards instead of different kinds of programs that are out there right now. And you know, that's, and my understanding of that's, this is a step forward in that direction of how we are having uniform standards and high standards, high quality standards for our voluntary pre-K programs. And I'm wondering if there could be a little bit more explanation in that area.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Committee members, yes, this proposal does in fact unify. We currently have funding going out to schools for public pre-K already through VPK and School Readiness Plus. They do, in fact, have slightly different standards. And so this this voluntary pre-kindergarten program unites those, including, I should also say, MPathway 2, right, which are all going in different ways, have different funding streams that are supporting them that schools are having to navigate, as well as providers. And so this will unify those under a single funding mechanism for those programs, with consistent, as you said, Madam Vice Chair, requirements.
Thank you. And this is an important piece of legislation. And just to echo and reiterate what Chair Pinto has said, it's one piece. And this is a committee that has sits in a great position to actually see all those pieces and how they come together. So I will again return the floor to Chair Pinto, and again for him to ask for the support for this, a really solid piece of legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for highlighting that point about this actually streamlines the variety of programs that we have as it supports providers, and I urge member support now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. So now I think we are ready for a vote. Seeing no further questions, Chair Pinto renews the motion to refer House File 4570 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Aye.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Aye.
Lead Franzen.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Daniels.
Daniels votes no.
Representative Davney.
Aye.
Representative Dameth.
Dameth, no.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, no.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz, aye.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes aye.
The vote results in 8 ayes and 5 noes.
With a vote of 8 ayes and 5 noes, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Chair Pinto will now resume the gavel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. So just to lay out where we're going to be in the next 8 days. So tomorrow at 10:30, we have a joint hearing with the House Public Safety Committee. And so I look forward to folks joining for that. There will be an informational hearing of a bill and the broader discussion. At 3 p.m. tomorrow, I should note that the bill that we've just passed will be heard in Education Finance. So just to make folks aware of that timing. Then on Tuesday, we will be walking through our budget proposals in other areas as that gets finalized, as we talked at the beginning of this hearing, and I'll keep in touch with Lead Franson on that. And then we also will be hearing informationally several bills that are in kind of in our general area, but relate to capital investment. So we don't have jurisdiction of the bills. We want to make sure we provide a review of them. On Wednesday, expect to have a testimony on our budget proposals. And then on Thursday, we'll do a markup, including any amendments there may be, and then vote that forward to Ways and Means. To confirm that, those proposals will include both our remaining education proposals and also health and services, since we cross both those areas. In Ways and Means, they'll be split up. Is the expectation and put with the budgets coming out of those respective committees. Are there questions, further questions members have about the process? I know there were the earlier questions about targets, and again, I'll keep in touch with Lee Franson on that, but any other questions about process? So not hearing any. So members, we're getting to end early today, which I know we'll all appreciate. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow at 10:30 and then working through things over the next week. Please keep in touch. And thanks so much. With that, we are adjourned.